You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 506 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland. It is Tuesday night here deep into the evening after what became actually a very entertaining basketball game between the Atlanta Hawks and the Toronto Raptors. The Hawks fell by a score of 104-101, but somehow in a three-point game, it was actually closer than that, and we'll talk a lot more about that game. That'll be the meat of the podcast, as it usually is after games, but there is a little bit of news to hit on, and there was an injury update that I wanted to sort of lead off with here. Miles Plumlee earlier this week was basically ruled out of action for about 2+ weeks here. The Hawks announced that he's been experiencing left knee pain, and that started off on January 4th in Milwaukee. As a result of that, he underwent a non-surgical procedure, and on that left knee, and he'll be reevaluated in 2 weeks. As we've been saying for a while, and all of these injury timetables, reevaluation does not mean return. Reevaluation means reevaluation. So 2+ weeks here for Plumlee. We'll see how long this is. Also, Chris Vivilmore of the AJC reported that the non-surgical procedure is a PRP injection. This is the same knee that Plumlee also had another non-surgical procedure on December 10th. And after that, he came back and played in 2 games in late December and then was injured again. You have to assume that those are probably correlated to some degree. But I understand Plumlee's not a huge part of the future for the Hawks or really the present for the Hawks, but he's making a lot of money. He's on the team for next year at $12.5 million. So as a result of that, he's someone who matters when it comes to the Hawks. And that was sort of the big headline news in terms of news in between the games on Sunday and the game on Tuesday. Other than that, though, everything else that was sort of viewed through the prism of the game that actually transpired on Tuesday night, there were some pregame injuries, though, that actually sort of impacted the game in some ways. First of all, Dwayne Dedmon was listed as probable originally with a left ankle sprain. That was sort of a new pop-up injury for Dedmon. He was upgraded to available midday, but I think it definitely appeared as if he was not full strength. I obviously was not in Toronto to ask about that, but Dedmon did not look to me like he was 100% in this game. We'll see how he fares after this, because the Hawks have a quick turnaround. But other than that, Kevin Huerter was originally listed as probable with mid-back pain. And then he was downgraded to questionable midday on Tuesday, and then later downgraded all the way to out. So Huerter did not play in this game, leaving the Hawks without their best three wings. And that's obviously rough for anyone, especially against the Raptors. So coming in, sort of the expectations were pretty low in this spot for the Hawks, just because of the fact that they were without those three guys. Dedmon was not 100%. The Hawks elected to start Jeremy Lin for the first time this season. They went with a Trae Young, Jeremy Lin starting backcourt. I will say that was probably somewhat specific to the matchup, in that the Raptors start Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet, who are both point guard size players. That kind of allows the Hawks to play, probably their two best options in Young and Lin. But still, I'm not sure that they would have done that against any team. But the Raptors sort of present that as a pretty good option, and it actually worked out pretty well for the Hawks, as we'll discuss here throughout the game. I will say one more note on the roster before the game started. I probably would have promoted or recalled Alex Poitras for this one. It's not a huge deal in a vacuum, honestly, because, the Hawks still played 10 guys. They had available players, and Amari Spellman actually didn't play at all, despite the fact that he was in Atlanta for this game. But Poitras was someone who I think would have been a good matchup against the Raptors, against guys like Pascal Siakam and Serge Ibaka, whereas Spellman really is not. And I think we saw that Alex Len really wasn't either in this spot. Again, it's a pretty small thing, but I think because Erie doesn't play until Friday, I probably would have promoted Poitras in this game, recalled him, brought him back, and probably had him available to play in this spot. But again, it didn't really matter in a grand sense, but I made that note that I wanted to pass along when it came to the roster ahead of the game. And honestly, even before this game started, and honestly, again, it went pretty well for the Hawks in a lot of ways. They lost the game, but it went very well. This is a really rough stretch for the Hawks schedule-wise. I want to say that now before I talk about the game. The next 6 games for the Hawks are really brutal, and honestly, I guess that includes the game tonight, so the next 5 games after the game on Tuesday are pretty brutal schedule-wise, and this one particularly stretching. It's a 3 games and 4 nights stretch for Atlanta, And it is obviously Toronto, then at Brooklyn on Wednesday night after a grueling game on Tuesday, and then at Philly on Friday. That's a really rough stretch. There'll be some emotions, I'm sure, for Lloyd Pierce on Friday night. But yeah, lots going on there. And this whole stretch, they come back home for the next three after that, but they're all very difficult home games. You know, Milwaukee, Boston. It's really sort of a tough stretch for the Hawks. And would have been nice to get the win here as a result of that, but still a pretty competitive effort from Atlanta. So we'll go at the top, as we always do, talk about the game that transpired here. Pretty sloppy in the first few minutes, I thought, of this contest. It was a really shaky start for Dwayne Dedmon, who was not great in this game, all told, as I sort of referenced before. The substitution pattern was kind of interesting to me. You know, when you start both your point guards, you kind of have to do some creative things to use your rotation in a normal way after that, because the Hawks don't really have a third point guard right now. So they actually brought in Justin Anderson first as the first wing sub. Then they went to he actually came in for Lynn, and then very shortly after that, Lynn came in for Young after a short break. So they kind of did that in both halves. Lynn would go out, and they brought him back quickly to get Young a breather, and then they sort of staggered them after that. Just not a huge surprise here, but there was a massive ovation for Vince Carter, who was probably making his last trip to Toronto. Vince has been very very coy about not saying this is a sort of a retirement tour for him. He keeps sort of shooting that down as a notion. But if he does retire, this will probably be the last trip that he has to Toronto, because the Hawks obviously are probably not going to be playoff bound this year. And unless he is traded for some reason, this is the last time that he'll be in Toronto if he retires at the end of the season. So, you know, there was the appropriate reaction for Vince, was a massive ovation, and he earned that. I think he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. So, and most of his best days were in Toronto. So something just file away there. That was a cool moment in a lot of ways, and honestly, appropriately, he checked in. The Hawks he checked in sort of the middle of this run, but the Hawks had a 10-2 run right after Carter checked in to take a 4-point lead early on. It was capped by a three from Carter that sort of elicited a bit of a crowd reaction into a timeout. That was a nice moment from the future Hall of Famer there. That was of course there was an immediate run from Toronto to retake the lead after that, but the Hawks had an 8-0 run later on in the first quarter. And also that was a big theme of the entire game. Both teams it was basically back and forth throughout. I'm going to probably talk about some of those runs back and forth, but a lot of 6-0s, 7-0s, and then by the final stretch run, just a back and forth game all night long. No real haymakers in terms of just massive runs or kicks from either side. Both teams never led by double figures in this game, which is kind of wild to see. So just something to keep in mind as we move forward here. There was a lineup that we saw for the first time this season, at least according to my research and the research of the guys at Peachtree Hoops that I was asking about this with in Slack during the game. It was a Jeremy Lin, Daniel Hamilton, Justin Anderson, Vince Carter, and Alex Lynn lineup. That was an interesting one. It wasn't like it was bad or good. It was just a spot that you don't want to see those five guys play together very often. It is worth noting that Jeremy Lin was awesome really in the whole game, but especially in the first quarter. He had 10 points on 4-4 shooting in the first quarter. He was a big part of the Hawks taking an early lead. Atlanta did have 7 turnovers in the first quarter. That was really the only black mark, because they shot the ball really well before the end of the first, but they were able to sort of hang around and lead after one quarter here. In the second, they briefly led by as many as 8 points at 47-39. Then Toronto had a 9-0 run of their own, sort of on cue as they kept doing here. Daniel Hamilton hit a nice late three to give the Hawks a 1-point lead at the half. Toronto actually went blank in the first quarter. They were 0-6 from 3, but in the second quarter, they were 6-9 from 3. And after the first quarter, they were pretty darn good. They were 10-27 the rest of the game. But 10-26 the rest of the game. But 6-9, particularly in the second quarter, that was sort of a big swing for Toronto making shots. Still, offense was not the calling card in this game on either end of the floor, and that proved to be the case throughout. Turnovers were pretty much the cause of both of those issues. The shooting was really kind of decent on both sides, but 27 turnovers from the Hawks. We'll talk more about that later. That was a season high, but that was also 19 from the Raptors. Just a lot of carelessness and sort of ugly but entertaining basketball at the same time. After halftime, sort of some scattered play in the early going in the third quarter. Actually, Lloyd Pierce called a timeout 72 seconds into the third quarter. He was not very pleased after sort of a rough patch. Positively for Atlanta, they were not really able to. They did not really give up a huge kick from Toronto, despite their ugly play coming out of the halftime break. I think Pierce was annoyed by that, and the timeout was quickly used and actually appropriately used. It turned out to be a 6-0 run from there after that timeout from the Hawks, and including a transition layup from Jeremy Lin after a nice steal from Bembry that led to the Raptors actually getting a technical foul. Kyle Lowry got teed up because Lin pretty clearly pushed off on the on the fast break layup that he made, and then Lowry hit a three and then got teed up for arguing with the officiating. Then Toronto tied the game with about 6 minutes to go in the third quarter, and from there it was pretty much again back and forth as it kind of was all night long. Bembry had five steals and with 9 minutes to go in the third quarter. He only ended with five. I say only because that's still a lot of steals. But yeah, it was pretty impressive to see him get five steals in his first like 18 minutes of court time and early in the third quarter. I will say there was a rough stretch offensively from the Hawks when Toronto threw a zone at them in the third quarter. It was not a coincidence that the Hawks had their worst offensive quarter in the third when they only scored 20 points. They were pretty baffled by that, it appeared. They eventually figured it out to the point where Toronto had to get out of it, but it took them a little bit of time to do that. And there was one notable fast break that has to be mentioned where neither D'Angelo Hamilton nor Justin Anderson wanted really anything to do with Pascal Siakam in transition, and they turned it over on just a terrible pass going backwards. That was an all-timer that you'll want to find. Was definitely not a good fast break, to be sure. But an 11-2 run by the Raptors to go up by five, then it sort of settled in at a 3-point margin for Toronto. Candidly, I kept waiting for the Hawks to sort of fade away. Toronto's just a lot better, and then Atlanta just never happened in this game. And again, credit to the Hawks for hanging around throughout. And honestly, Toronto didn't play well in this game, but they were not able to run away and hide, which is made it a lot more fun down the stretch. I'll do a little bit of play-by-play here. There was a stretch with about 10 minutes to go where Pascal Siakam had two free throws that he missed both of. If he had made those, that would have put Toronto up by seven and kind of put them in firm charge. Instead, he missed them both, and then the Hawks scored seven straight points to retake the lead. That left the game with a tie with about 6 minutes to go. From there, there was Trae Young free throws to go up by two. Then Kawhi tied it with a jumper. Dorsey hit a three from the Hawks. He actually played pretty well in this game to go up by a 3-point margin, 97-94. Spoiler alert here, neither team had a more than 3-point lead over the final 9-plus minutes of this game. You don't normally see that. Even in back-and-forth games, you might see somebody go up by 5 or 6 or even 4. Neither team led by more than 3 points in the final 9.5 minutes or so. That made it for an interesting, recap and note-taking session from me, but it was just one of those things where it just kept going back and forth and back and forth, and nobody could take control, and that made it a lot of fun. There was Serge Ibaka made a jumper to get back within one with 3:44 to go. That prompted the Hawks to call a timeout. Then Deadman turned the ball over. That was actually stolen by Kawhi Leonard. That actually gave them a layup to take the lead. Again, seemed like Toronto might run away there as well, but they didn't. From there, Trae got his shot blocked but at the rim, but Deadman followed it up with an easy one to get back within one, and Kawhi then missed, and then one of those things where the Hawks go up by three with 2:15 to go on a pair of free throws from Deadman after a nice pass by Trae Young. They give up a layup to OG Anunoby to get back within one from there, and then a trade-off of wide-open missed threes. Deadman at the top of the key, followed by Kyle Lowry, misses a wide-open three, like an absolutely uncontested beautiful kick out from Kawhi Leonard. I will say it was a nice rotation from Trae Young to force the pass out of Leonard's hands and into Lowry's hands. Lowry's the guy who probably makes that shot more often than not. It was a pretty bad miss, actually, from Kyle Lowry in that spot. That prompted a timeout with the Hawks up by one. From there, though, the inbounds pass from Jeremy Lin was actually tipped and stolen. The Raptors called timeout, and then Leonard missed a three out of that, but then stole the ball from Bembry on the other end of the floor. The Raptors then worked the ball around to Serge Ibaka with 17 seconds to go for a wide-open dunk to go up by one, and that sets the stage for the play that everybody was talking about after the game. The Hawks called timeout at 17 seconds to go. Basically, it was pretty clear from the broadcast after the game. They interviewed Loy Pierce after the game. He was pretty clear that I don't think he called what ended up transpiring after the game. He was kind of laughing, more of a wry smile than anything else, I think. But Trae Young decided to go sort of one-on-one against Kawhi Leonard, the best defender in the league, and that didn't go well. No call. It was deflected, and the ball sort of harmlessly landed in the arms of the Raptors, who then had a leak-out dunk sort of at the buzzer. I will say there was 0.7 seconds to go after the clock stop at the dunk. It was actually kind of a stupid play by Toronto to dunk the ball there. They could have easily just run it out and won the game. And as a result of that, Vince Carter had a three in the air from about 50 feet. It was definitely not a likely make, but it was actually looked pretty good in the air. It was a little bit of a scare for Raptors fans, I'm sure. But that ended the game itself. Just on that last possession a little bit, I will say, Pierce referenced education for Trae Young as like one of those things that you see, for a rookie point guard, I'm gonna read part of the quote to you in terms of what it is. And by the way, Trey after the game tweeted, and I quote, "You live and you learn." End quote. That probably, I'm gonna assume that refers to the end of the game, just because that's what Pierce said. He represents education. I'm sure Young was feeling that a little bit. Pierce said, and I quote, "You have a rookie going up against the best perimeter defender in the league. He kind of just fell for the bait. I would get nervous if Kawhi was guarding me too. I get it. It's an education for a young guy. He'll never forget this game. I think he understands that, and he understands that we want to walk out of there with a win. We don't want to leave time on the clock, et cetera, et cetera." I can read the whole thing to you, but basically it comes down to the fact that Young just kind of, it felt like that was not the play that they wanted at the end of the game. It was not, you know, sort of in a vacuum, I think Trae Young ISO is not a bad decision, but when you're going against Kawhi Leonard, who's someone with his length is going to be just be able to swallow up Young, we saw that in that spot. It would have been nice to see them run something with a screen or something like that. And, you know, live and you learn, as he says there, and as I was going to probably say after the game regardless. But, yeah, I think there's probably too much talk about that. It's one possession. I know it was the game-winning possession, I suppose, or the game-losing possession. But I think the broader focus in this game should be the fact the Hawks were able to hang for 48 full minutes against a Raptors team that's much, much better than them. And they were able to do that without their three best wings. That's a pretty fantastic performance from the Hawks in a lot of ways. So, you know, big picture stuff here. The offenses were really bad in this game. Neither team got to 100 points, got to 100 offensive rating, and that is pretty telling. I will say the shooting again was pretty decent on both ends of the floor. The Hawks shot 54% from true shooting, and the Raptors have 57% true shooting. But you know, Toronto still a 99 offensive rating because of the fact they turned the ball over a lot and just didn't create extra possessions a lot. The Hawks had 13 offensive rebounds. You know, credit to John Collins and Dwayne Dedmon for having 8 of those 13 offensive rebounds. That helped them, to be sure. But the 27 turnovers are just, that's just too many. It's season high. I mean, it kind of speaks for itself when it's a season high in turnovers, but it's been a problem all year long. And honestly, it's kind of a miracle the Hawks were within 3 points when they had their season high turnovers against the Raptors on the road. And they were able to just really be in this game. It's kind of just remarkable. And credit to their defense and the credit to their competitiveness in this spot. Again, I don't think Toronto played well at all, which just has to be said at least at some point on this podcast. Other than Kawhi, I'm not sure who played well for the Raptors. I guess Pascal had some nice moments, but he actually had some ugly moments as well. Ananobi was pretty good, I will say, just because he is a pretty solid across the board player. But other than that, you know, their supporting cast was not great. Lowry was not very good in this game. VanVleet kind of struggled. Ibaka kind of struggled in some ways. So not a great showing for the Raptors, but they got the win. And, you know, big picture stuff, the Hawks were able to compete in this spot. We'll come back and we'll talk about more about the individual play here in a second. I do want to take a moment to tell everybody to subscribe to the podcast. I'd really appreciate that. I know I say that all the time, but I really, really would appreciate it. Please tell your friends. Please share it with your parents and brothers and sisters and anybody that you want to listen. Anybody that might have some interest in listening to the podcast, if you're an Atlanta Hawks fan, maybe you're a lapsed Atlanta Hawks fan and you kind of grew up with it and kind of faded away. It's kind of a fun time to come back. Might be a good time to go ahead and do that. So go ahead and sell your friends on that and sell them on the podcast as well. Please take a moment to check out the entire network, subscribe, all that fun stuff. I really, really appreciate it. So after this short break, we'll come back and talk about the individual stuff from this game. Okay, and we're back to talk about the individual stuff in this game, as we always do in breaking down contests. The bench was not great in this spot. There were nice moments from some guys, but it wasn't terribly effective nor pronounced. A lot of the starters played more minutes than they normally would, and that's the case when you have three guys out in terms of your starting caliber players in Prince, Bazemore, and Kevin Huerter, as well as Devin being kind of shorthanded. So on the bench, I thought Hamilton and Dorsey were the two bright spots, to be honest with you. Hamilton ended up being minus 18, which is kind of misleading. I thought he actually was much better than that. Had 6 points, 3 steals, an assist, and a rebound in 15 minutes. 2-3 from the floor, 1-of-1 from the three-point line. There were moments where he was kind of a liability, but I thought Daniel Hamilton competed. I'll say the same thing about Dorsey here in a second, but I thought Hamilton played hard, was effective reasonably in terms of just creating for others and kind of making things happen. He has some weaknesses, to be sure, but I thought he played pretty well. Honestly, a pretty small sample there. Dorsey, the same thing. 6 points and 3 rebounds for him in 16 minutes. 2-of-4 from the field, 2-of-3 from three. Has some nice fourth quarter minutes from him, honestly. The rebounding continues to be a nice positive force for Dorsey. He's very competitive on the glass. Something I've always liked about his game. He'll go up at high point balls offensively and also defensively as well, just kind of rip away rebounds that normal two guards don't really get. That's a strength of his. He was plus five in 16 minutes. I thought he was pretty solid, honestly, and they needed his contributions in a big way. Justin Anderson did not score, only took one shot, had a block along the way and a rebound, but I wish he'd just shoot more. There was one glaring kick-out pass that he just has to shoot from the corner. He had a pretty open three, just a pretty normal spot where a wing's got to shoot that shot. I like Anderson quite a bit. His defense is very valuable. We saw that a few times in this game where his defense is like bordering on elite. He's so good defensively and so big and so strong in a lot of matchups, but offensively, he's just got to shoot the ball. And I think that's probably the biggest reason why they don't play him more. I still would, just because of the value of his defense in certain matchups, but I sort of get it when he doesn't shoot the ball like he didn't in this game. Alex Len was very quiet, as I mentioned before. 0 points, 0-4 from the floor, 0-2 from three. 6 rebounds. I will say this is sort of a rough matchup for him in a lot of ways. They did play Greg Monroe a little bit, which allowed him to play some minutes on the floor, but without Jonas Valanciunas, they don't really play a true center all that often. You know, Ibaka definitely is a center first at this point in time, at least in my opinion, but he's not really the traditional like plodding center that Len is probably better suited to play against. In fact, if they really had another option, I would probably like them to go away from Len most of the game. But with Deadman kind of struggling, they had to try Len, and it just didn't work out particularly well. And then finally, Vince Carter, 13 minutes for him, 2 threes. I mentioned the one in the first quarter. Did have 3 turnovers. Didn't play particularly well or terribly either. He just was kind of Vince Carter out there. He had 4 fouls, had 1 bad turnover on a moving screen as well, which was kind of a rough football-style moving screen that he got called for. But other than that, I thought he was okay. It wasn't like he was bad, but just kind of a non-factor in some ways. One guy who didn't play that was available was Amari Spellman. Not a huge surprise there. A bad matchup for him as well in terms of just physicality, athleticism at this point in time. Spellman, I'll be interested to see how he looks when he plays again in Atlanta. Again, I think I plugged this on the previous show, but Jeff Siegel wrote about him in the G League if you want to go and catch up on that. But a DNP for Spellman, he was the only guy available that didn't play, and the Hawks used 10 guys in this game. To the starters, the one guy I thought that didn't play well was Wayne Dedmon. I mentioned that before, but 12 points, 8, 9 rebounds. He just had the excuse of the ankle injury, so I'm sure that played some part of it, but he was 5 of 15 from the floor, 0 of 4 from 3, just didn't move well defensively either. You know, he was plus 6, so it looks like in 14, and obviously had 12 and 9, so a near double-double. I think that probably overstates how he actually played in this spot. He was not efficient. He didn't play great defense, and that was not a great spot for him, in my opinion. Bembry, this is one I have to talk about for a little bit of time here. Bembry had a really good game in some ways, a really bad game in some ways. It was sort of the entire DeAndre Bembry experience. First and foremost, I am a big fan of his. I always have been. I love the draft pick. I was talking about the Hawks drafting him before he even got picked. I loved him in college. All that to say, he struggled, of course, the first 2 years. He's been much more prominent this year, and with good reason. But the highs are high and the lows are low, and that's kind of the theme of the game. Honestly, he had 11 points. 6 rebounds, 5 assists, and 5 steals. That sounds great, right? 37 minutes. You know, he's very productive, especially the 5 steals and the 5 assists. He made a lot of things happen. He was great defensively. We'll talk about that more in a second here. But he had 7 turnovers, and he was 5 of 13 from the floor. And that tells the story as well. Bembry's been really good defensively this year. I thought he was great defensively in this game. He did a really good job on a lot of different guys. He was a huge part of the Hawks playing well man on the floor. And they needed him to be sure. There's a reason why he led the team in minutes, and it's because they just had to have him out there defensively most of the game. So that's out of the way. The steals, all that fun stuff. The assists and the rebounds, he's very active. Pierce loves that activity about him, the way that he plays hard. But, you know, the assists are kind of misleading. I think he just made a lot of mistakes offensively. Something that he definitely does a lot of right now is just make a lot of mistakes. And I think Bembry, When it works, it looks good, but when it doesn't, it just looks terrible, and I think it's frustrating. I know a lot of fans are frustrated by him offensively. He was 5-13 from the floor, which isn't like jarringly bad or anything like that, but he's just not efficient around the rim either. So, again, he does a lot of things well. He did a lot of things well in this game. He did a lot of things poorly as well. The end product is someone you have to just live with right now because he's the best wing that's available to you, but I think you also saw some of the problems with having him as a prominent piece of your team in this game as well. So he's definitely better suited for a smaller role. We saw that on full display here. The 7 turnovers were not coincidental, and the Hawks taking this loss. Elsewhere, Trae Young, 8 of 20 from the floor. He took 20 shots, which didn't really honestly feel like that many. I know he led the team in shots by a wide margin. It didn't feel like he was dominating the ball in this game. I actually thought Trae played pretty well. 19 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, and 2 steals. Defensively, he was pretty active. I thought he gave definitely an above-average performance from him defensively in this game. He was not terribly efficient. Obviously, 20 shots for 19 points is not great, but the passing was good. He was under control for the most part. The last play of the game was not great, obviously, but 1 of 5 from 3 isn't terrible by any means. It's not good, but it's not deplorable. And yeah, I thought Young was pretty solid, honestly. It wasn't like he was fantastic. It wasn't like he was bad. Yeah, I thought he was, slightly above average from his normal baseline, and we'll kind of leave it there despite the fact that the attention will be on the last play of the game. I don't really care about that in the grand scheme. Obviously, it'll matter later on in his career, but, big picture, I thought he was pretty solid in this game. Jeremy Lin was great, I thought. 20 points, 9 assists, 4 rebounds, and 4 turnovers for Lin. Again, I thought he played a ton more than he normally would have, obviously, in this game. 35 minutes for Lin. He was the second most minutes on the team behind Bembry. That's because, partially, again, that Toronto was playing small, and it's also because the Hawks didn't have great wings. He's a better player than Hamilton. He's a better player than Dorsey. He's a better player than Anderson, and he's better than Bembry, obviously. But that's why you play him more on this spot. It was a good matchup to use Jeremy Lin a lot. They did that, and he rewarded them with great play. I tweeted this during the game, but he's really just a craftsman in pick and roll. It's one of those things what Pierce talks about all the time. They just know what he can do. It's a very different style from what Trae Young does, but if you just want to let Jeremy Lin cook and pick and roll, especially in that mid-range area, he's able to do it. He's sort of a craftsman. He just is a pro, knows what he's doing, can create shots for himself and others, and he's just very good. And we saw that in this game. Last but not least, John Collins, 21 points, 14 rebounds. Ho-hum, another day at the office for John Collins, but 8 of 11 from the floor, 2 of 3 from the free throw line. But I think most importantly, other than just the raw numbers, was 3 of 3 from 3. He's been very good recently from 3. I think he's 6 of 13 or 6 of 14 in the last 5 games from 3. That's a pretty small sample, obviously, but after the slow start, he's coming around there. Pierce mentioned that after the game, it's sort of a work in progress still. Obviously, they know that there's a lot of work to be done when it comes to Collins shooting, but he's shooting the ball with confidence. We see that. It's not all just results-based. I think it looks pretty good as he's shooting it. He's shooting it with confidence. He's kind of just letting it fly. And the Hawks have to like that about John. So that's one big step forward from him. It's a one-game sample, but I thought he played well in an overall sense, and the shooting is very, very nice to hold on to. So, all that said, Hawks have a really tough turnaround after this game. I wish they had a day off here to sort of enjoy this one. I know they lost it, but they just played well. I mean, they exceeded any rational expectation in this game by anyone. They were 13.5, 14-point underdogs. To lose by 3 in a game that they probably should have lost by 1, a very nice performance from the Hawks in a lot of ways. But now they're on the road again, back-to-back with travel, Wednesday night against the suddenly red-hot Brooklyn Nets. They'll be an underdog in that game as well. We'll see how they handle that on the road against a team that isn't, overwhelmingly talented, but the Nets will be favored in the game, as they should be. So we'll see how the Hawks can play well there. And if they have Kevin Huerter back, that would be helpful as well. We'll see. I keep an eye on my Twitter feed at BTRoland for the injury report as the game sort of gets closer and closer. The Hawks will be updating Huerter, I'm sure, after the game tonight and then into Wednesday morning. So stay tuned for that. Again, one more time, please subscribe to the podcast. I hope you enjoyed this one. I know it was sort of a rough shot, all over the place kind of a recap podcast, but there was just so much going on. And again, 9-plus minutes of no team having more than a 3-point lead leads to a lot of information. So I knew I threw a lot at you on this podcast. I hope you guys appreciated sort of the breakdown of how things went in this spot. And again, it was sort of a fun game to watch, even if the game was kind of a slog in the big picture sense. So thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you guys tomorrow night.